Plus, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Repeat after me. It's all about food. Because why? We know why. It is all about food. Everything that's connected to everything we do on this planet is connected to the food that we eat, our health, and the other animals on this planet that we share our home with, and the health of the planet, too. It's related to the food that we see on our plate. It's September 11th, 2012 today, and I just want to take a brief moment. I'm here in Manhattan, and it's a beautiful sunny day today, but there is some heavy sad energy today in memory of what happened to us 11 years ago, and we can't forget that, but there are so many things that we have to keep in our minds at all times, and just process that with everything we do. Are we doing what we believe in? Are we supporting what we believe in? There are so many things that are out of our control. And, you know, we may elect some of our politicians and others may get through that we don't agree with. But the thing that we can control is what we do in our everyday lives, what we eat, what we buy, what we do, and the people we share our lives with, telling them that we support them and we love them, and just put all that love out there. I think it'll make a tremendous difference. And if there are things that are really annoying you, write letters to your politicians. Just do everything you possibly can. It matters. That's underlined. It matters. Right. Okay, it's all about food. And today, guess what? We're talking about food, my favorite subject. And I have a very special guest here today. I have Talia Furman. There are a number of people in this alternative food movement that are like creating little, maybe a mini dynasties in a way. You know, we have John Robbins and Ocean Robbins, his son, and there's T. Colin Campbell, and his son is becoming a doctor
now.
And Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn has his son, Rip Esselstyn, who's written the Engine 2 diet. We have Frances Moore LePay and Anna LePay following in her footsteps, and now we have Talia Furman, who is the daughter of my favorite doctor, Dr. Joel Furman. And you recently graduated from Cornell University.
I did. I now have my bachelor's degree in nutritional sciences. And you're absolutely right. When you're brought up in a household where you're taught what you are is what you eat, you can't help but want to go into this field. I grew up in my father's medical office when he was seeing diabetic patients and patients who had cancer and autoimmune diseases that they, you know, the patients believed were incurable. Right. And my dad would cure them. And it's just a miracle to see yourself struggling with your health, you know, can't get out of bed, you know, in the morning, or get migraines, whatever your health problem is, to have it disappear. And that joy in helping people is something so gratifying. I don't think there's anything more powerful than that. And if you're growing up in that environment, while you're also enjoying the food that you're eating, how could you not want to go into that career field? That is the question.
Yeah, well, I love everything that you're saying. Now, there are some kids that grow up and they tend to rebel against their parents. Now, did you ever feel that rebellion at all, or you just were on the path from day one?
110% there was rebellion involved. I'm a 25-year-old woman right now speaking from my gratitude from growing up, and this is where I am at this point. But, you know, elementary school, middle school, buying a chocolate chip cookie in seventh grade was the equivalent of doing drugs
or smoking
pot. I had a little stash of candy under my bed. I went through that phase for sure, and I think that's natural as well. But in my case, by the time I was in eighth grade, I had committed to my dad's way of eating. And eighth grade is young. That's about 13
right.
years old. And you did not want to be my friend at that age, because if you were eating a donut, I'd say, you know, I'm not so sure you want to be eating that donut with that, all that partially hydrogenated oil and saturated fat. So I also went through the, you know, overstepping my grounds, where I just wanted all my friends to be on the lifestyle that I was on. And so I went through phases, but then I also learned that it's important to only, you know, give people advice when they ask for it. And
that's right.
You want to educate people, but you want to make people feel comfortable too.
What I like to say is you want to look good and you want to feel good, and you can do that on this great diet so that people will come to you and say, what is it? I mean, you're glowing. You always have energy. What are you doing?
We literally are what we eat. It's incredible. if we're, you know, eating kale and other green vegetables and drinking the green drinks, you can literally see a brightness in our face. So you know when somebody's eating healthily, and you know when somebody's eating the standard American diet, and breakouts, you look paler, you don't have that glow. It's remarkable. And it's a sign of health when you do.
Okay, so I just want to hear more about the rebellion a little bit, because this is a thing a lot of parents go through with young kids, and a lot of them give in. They just give in to the pressure. Media marketing companies know this, and they cater a lot to children, to brainwash children and make them want the toy, make them want the colorful, whatever it is, the sugary thing. And the parents give in because they can't handle the whining. So you started school, I imagine, kindergarten or whatever, and you must have been exposed from an early age to junk.
It's all about a balancing act. At home, my mom only had healthy food. There was no cookies, no, obviously. Mm-hmm. But outside of the home, she's not around when I'm in school, lunch hour. So I would eat whatever I wanted. And so all she could do was teach me about nutrition, and then I'm left on my own. Mm-hmm. And she basically treated me like an adult, and she respected me. And I think that's the most important thing you can do if you're a mother for your child, is you teach them the proper foods to eat, and you make them natural, wonderful, healthy foods at home that they like. And then outside the home, you leave it up to them to make the right choices. And my mother also knew that I liked, you know, pizza at school lunches. So maybe, you know, every other Friday when they have their special, you know, pizza come in from Domino's, what have you, she wouldn't forbid me from having it. She wanted me to, you know, be like all the other kids. There's, you know, there's a right and a wrong, and I think that you can overdo it as well. So I'm so grateful for my parents for, you know, not being so overly fanatical that I rebelled even more.
That's good. And your siblings have gone through similar paths as you?
I would say so. Some earlier, some later. It's different from everyone. But I have two younger sisters. One is a freshman in college and the other is a senior in college. And we all love the way we eat now. We all just couldn't be more thankful. So it worked out in the end.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so now you go to college and you're studying nutrition. And a lot of interesting people have come out of Cornell University. So what did you think of the program?
There's so much benefit from going to Cornell. You learn not just about nutrition, but also how food is processed in the body, what happens when you take a vitamin pill, how many people are on food stamps. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot about the psychology of what we eat, more than I did about what we should be eating. I'd say 3 out of the 4 years were spent taking chemistry classes, working my way up in microbiology and calculus. And a lot of it is a weeding out process. It is Cornell University, a tough school, and a lot of the people in my major were going into medicine. So I have to say I enjoyed it, and it taught me work ethic. But as far as what do we eat in our everyday lives to prevent diseases, that wasn't what it was about at all. It was actually very conventional at the time. The food guide pyramid was, you know, instead of the My Plate, was still around. So we were taught the food guide pyramid. Cornell has a prominent animal sciences department, and they're a huge fan of dairy and ice cream. We have a famous ice cream bar. Not exactly healthy for you, right? So any professor that taught that dairy products were harmful, there was going to be backlash involved. Mm-hmm. So I can't say that the advice I was given about what to eat was accurate.
Right. Mm-hmm. Did you have any rebellious moments while you were in college with any of your professors?
It was tricky because I did want to get those A's.
Yeah.
So I sometimes would go to office hours and try to talk to them one-on-one about, what do they think about the China study? Have they heard of Dr. Campbell and his work? And that didn't get me far with a lot of my professors, honestly. Mm-hmm. And many of them were overweight and had health problems of their own, which I find very ironic.
Yeah, well, anyone that you're learning about nutrition from, or someone you go to a doctor where you want medical care, if they don't look healthy, Why would you want to listen to them?
It's all too often. Now, my dad says he didn't take one nutrition class when he was in medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that say about our country?
Well, it says a number of things, but I mean, I've heard that there's a little bit more nutrition in some schools being offered today than before, but I don't think it's a whole lot. And the other thing it says is that your father is a genius.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's learned so much and he knows so much about nutrition, and I wish, I just wish there were a lot more of him to go around.
Right. And those classes that are taught, I took a few of them in high school. They're government-based, and what's recommended by the government is, you know, where do they get the money from? It's from the meat and dairy industry. It's full of propaganda. It's not exactly what the science shows. There's money involved, obviously. So it's a step in the right direction when we're offering courses for adolescents. It's teaching them to think about what they're putting in their mouths, but it's not the right information that we need. And obviously, given, you know, that heart disease is the number one killer in America and that breast cancer rates are increasing, it's one of the most significant problems in this country, and it costs so much money that it's a huge investment to teach people about what they eat for their health reasons, but, you know, economically, quality of life, it's such a tragedy that my father's information isn't common knowledge.
Yep, it is a tragedy. It is a tragedy indeed. And like you said before, you can't just tell people this information. They have to want to hear it. So often, especially when I see people that are sick, and I'm not a doctor, I'm not a nutritionist, and I know that I have information that can save their lives, and yet, you know, they're so close to wanting to hear because their doctor didn't tell them that information. It really is tragic. What about the kids? What about the young adults that you were going to class with? Did many of them feel like you did? I mean, I'm sure you talked outside of class about health and nutrition. Were they on the same path as you or different?
It was definitely mixed. Most of them were taught nothing about nutrition, came from families where, you know, maybe they were an Italian family and made a lot of, you know, meat and, you know, pasta dishes. Mm-hmm. Or they came, most of them came in with no knowledge about, you know, true nutrition. And so, you know, it was mind-blowing to see a lot of these friends, you know, taking Adderall to study late in the evening, pull all-nighters, go to the dining halls and eat hamburgers and french fries. And these were going to be the future dietitians of America. That was most of my classmates. Then I, you know, after years of going to school there, I sought out friends who had the same philosophy that I did, and I found them. And there was a handful. And I just, they're my best friends now. And they have, obviously, you know, they did this research on their own. Not everybody comes from a family where it's just handed to you on a silver platter. So I respect these friends like no other because they're so passionate about it. They read the books on their own. They're self-taught, and that's remarkable. And so they are out there, but I'd say 1 in 10 people in my class was a vegan, or my dad likes to say a nutritarian, where you eat for nutrients.
Right. Mm. Well, it's going to get better, but we have a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And you are a part of that getting better. Excuse me. Okay. So, you write occasional, posts for different blog sites. And,
yes.
You just wrote a post that I thought was pretty interesting on body odor. What motivated you to do that?
Well, I had just read the biography of Steve Jobs, and Steve Jobs was a vegan, and he also wasn't a fan of bathing because he believed that his vegan diet left his natural body odor a pleasant, more delightful smell than his fellow standard American diet eaters. So I was wondering if he was onto something there, because I've had roommates in college that ate, especially the guys, a lot of the steaks and the meats, and then just processed white flour products and pastas and cereals. And one of these roommates was so memorable. He smelled so bad. I'd have to open the windows after he took a shower. And I knew that it had to do with his diet and what he was eating. Mm-hmm. And a lot of guys, even if they shower, I'm sorry, they still smell. And I've also interacted with people who eat a nutrient-rich diet, and they don't have that terrible body odor. So it also, in my own life, I was noticing a trend. And so I decided to look into it. And I did find a study that showed that women, when they smelled the body odor of men who were vegetarian for only 2 weeks, they put the men on either a vegetarian diet or a non-vegetarian diet, and the woman... 100% of the time preferred the odors of the vegetarian men. And this was the only study that I found done, but it's very remarkable.
It sounds like a very gross study, actually.
It does.
That women had to sniff the different pads of odors with men on them.
Right.
We have a call.
Excellent.
Oh, great. So I have a few things I want to talk about on that subject, but let's talk to John from New Jersey. Hi, welcome to It's All About Food, John.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I had a question. I'm a big fan of Dr. Furman myself. I have several of his books and DVDs.
Love him.
Amazing, amazing.
Yes.
But I also delve into a lot of information on 100% raw vegan as well, not just like the majority of raw vegetables and then a little bit of cooked. So I was wondering if, the young Dr. Furman there had a chance to delve into a lot of that information as well.
Absolutely. I know the answer to this question.
Great.
Easily. Some nutrients are absorbed more efficiently when they're cooked, and some more absorb more efficiently when they're raw. And oftentimes when people go on a raw food diet, they can't get enough calories unless they're eating a lot of nuts and seeds. And so you often you might be eating a lot of raw green vegetables and other vegetables, which is great, but how are you going to get the rest of your calories? Because those green vegetables are so low in calories, it's just you can't live off of them. Versus a cooked diet in which you're eating beans, because beans are so important for long-term health. Those most of the time have to be eaten cooked. What about tomatoes, for example? They're one of those foods when you cook them, the nutrient absorption is actually enhanced. If you look at tomato sauce, for example, it's a nice, rich red color versus sometimes a raw tomato is a paler in color. And you see the rich color, that's a sign that it's higher in nutrients. So and mushrooms, for example, are actually toxic when they're eaten raw, but when you cook them, they promote cancer prevention. So my dad likes to say 50% of your vegetables should be cooked and 50% of them raw. Because if you cook green vegetables, you could eat more of them at one time. Kale, for example, you cook it, and you chop it up with a nice cashew cream sauce, and it's delicious, and there's nothing more nutritious than that. So it's, raw vegetables are fantastic, but ideally you'd want to supplement them with cooked foods as well. There's a lot of myths out there about the raw food diet.
Yeah. Just like every kind of diet, if you're choosing to eat meat or fish or vegetarian or vegan or raw, there are variations on each one of those diets, and some of them are healthier than others. And even on a raw food diet, some people eat entirely fruit. And, I know one or two people that look like they're doing okay, but I think for the most part, most people don't thrive on all fruit. And then others, like Talia was saying, need to add more fat to their food just to feel satisfied. So it may vary between people, but...
Right, and sometimes health problems don't show up years later.
Right.
So people eating a raw food diet with primarily fruits, they could be okay for a few years and then suddenly feel weak or have a nutrient deficiency. And my dad has often seen this not just with 100% raw eaters, but sometimes vegans who don't supplement properly or they're not on a nutrient-rich vegan diet. You have to be careful when you go on plans like these, because you could feel good in the moment, but not later.
Well, you just said something. A lot of times in magazines and news articles, even some science articles, when they talk about vegetarian and vegan diets, they always say you have to be careful when you're having a vegetarian or vegan diet. But the thing is, you need to be careful on just period. We're learning more about nutrition. We all need to pay attention because most people are sick and they're on a meat junk food based diet.
Education is power, and we have all of the resources to educate ourselves. I could have learned more about nutrition, proper nutrition, by going to my local Barnes and Nobles than I did from attending Cornell. Mm-hmm. Cornell was rigorous, and you know, you get your basic education, but the true science that we need, you can just pick up a book.
Speaking of going to Cornell, I mean, one of the things you really want is that piece of paper that says that you've graduated, because that's very important in today's world.
Absolutely.
Steve Jobs did not have that piece of paper.
That's right.
But he was really very smart. But I wanted to say one thing about him, and that is some people will say that he was on a vegan diet. You know, why did he die?
I've questioned that myself, and Dr. McDougall has a fantastic article that I read online that talks about this very subject. And it seems as though Steve was exposed to toxic chemicals working with computers at a very young point in his life. Obviously, we don't know all of the reasons why he developed cancer, but cancer is something that starts in the body and doesn't, when you're young, and doesn't manifest itself in a cancer diagnosis, let's say 30 or 40 years later. You know, it takes that one DNA, mistake, and then, you know, doesn't balloon into that tumor much later on. So the vegan diet might have helped him live longer. He might have died much younger with that cancer. Mm-hmm. So it could have only been helpful, not harmful. And, you know, who's to say what actually happened? But that's essentially what the McDougall article says.
Right. Well, we don't know, but there are some things that we do know. And certainly a anti-cancer, superfood, immune system boosting, nutrient-rich diet is going to help anyone. But there are so many other factors to our health and well-being. And a lot of it is emotional and certainly environmental. And something can get out of balance. And then you really need to step things up a notch. So with Steve, of course, I don't know about him, but we know he worked very hard. Maybe he wasn't focusing enough on his sleep and mental attitude. I mean, there was just so many different
factors.
There's
so many different factors, and you could be a healthful vegan or an unhealthful vegan. And there's, for example, there's something that many vegans overdo is isolated soy protein. Mm-hmm. This is the processed isolated protein from the soy product. So I'm not saying that edamame or eating tofu or soy milk is bad, but when you see on ingredient list isolated soy protein, it actually promotes cancer just as would other animal products. And this is something in, you know, processed vegan foods, or if you eat, you know, at a vegan restaurant, we don't know what Steve was eating, and he could have been, you know, eating processed food.
Who's to say? That's right. Okay, so we just have a few more minutes, and I want to know what you're going to do with the rest of your life.
Well, I couldn't be more passionate about my future career, obviously, just from speaking to me. But my long-term goal is to go to culinary school at the Natural Gourmet Institute, working to make healthy food taste delicious, and also to get my master's and eventually become a dietitian. So to become a chef and a dietitian. And currently, I'm working on a body image book, How Do We Love Ourselves on the Inside and the Outside. And that means, you know, what do we eat to get clear skin, as you were saying before? How do we prevent Alzheimer's and dementia in later years? How do we feel good every day while we're young? But also, you know, what does it mean to feel good about yourself on the inside? And so it tackles the psychology of feeling well, because you could be eating this way, you could be slim and fit, but if you're insecure, you know, that's another component altogether. So it's geared towards young women.
Well, young women need this message. Mm-hmm.
So that's my big project at the moment. But who knows what'll happen in the future. I like not to think too much. You know, you can work in the present, but you never know what'll happen.
So when you want to have something decadent, if it ever happens, or for a birthday, for example, what do you have for a treat?
It's funny you say that because my weakness is dark chocolate, so I definitely understand temptation.
But dark chocolate has some nutritional
dark
value.
Dark chocolate's great, and it's the other ingredients in dark chocolate, like the sugar and maybe if it's made with dairy products and the high fat. But cocoa is quite healthy, and I use it in a lot of my recipes. I'm a huge fan of baking, and I use unconventional ingredients like actually... it's beans instead of oil, and it gives the recipes a nice, wonderful moistness. And I promise you can't taste the beans at all. And I only use dates or bananas or figs or other fruits as sweeteners. And I make fantastic brownies and muffins with strawberries and blueberries and blackberries and all sorts of great treats that are pretty much guilt-free. Even my friends who know nothing about the way I eat love them.
Absolutely. Well, we definitely need more of that. Mm-hmm.
Eat to Live cookbook is coming out in a few months, and that has a few of those recipes that I just mentioned.
I was wondering when we were going to see an Eat to Live cookbook. So we have to mention that Eat to Live has been on the New York Times bestseller list now for about 55, 56 weeks, I think.
It's crazy.
Yeah, this is really inspiring that so many people are interested.
I couldn't be more thrilled. And my father now has a new PBS show on Super Immunity, his other book. And that I couldn't recommend that more. And for anyone that's read Eat to Live, Super Immunity is a fantastic addition. I read it when it came out, and I learned so much. So... gotta drink that elderberry juice when you're sick.
Elderberry juice. I've never tried that.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, we haven't talked. We have like, 30 seconds or something? I don't even know. A minute or so. Your health. Do you get colds? And what's your health like after growing on this nutritarian diet for so long?
I have so much energy every day, and I rarely get sick. But we can't avoid getting exposed to viruses, especially in the wintertime and obviously when you're living in dorms in college. Mm-hmm. So I would occasionally get sick maybe, once every few years, and I would recover faster than my friends would. But that's not to say that I never, ever get sick. So if you're eating well and you do get sick, we're all human. Mm-hmm. But you rebound faster because your immune system is stronger.
Well, sometimes those effects that happen to us is our body's way of purging something that doesn't belong.
That's a great point. And fevers are a sign of detoxification. So we don't want to take medications to reduce the fevers. We want to just ride it out naturally and drink, and eat lightly when we're sick.
Mm-hmm. And do you travel much?
I travel all the time.
Yeah. And what's the food like when you get to travel? How do you manage that?
You know what? It's not hard. I don't understand when people tell me, oh, I can't eat this way because I travel all the time or this or that. You know what? There's vegetables everywhere. If you go out to a restaurant and you tell them that you want, spinach or broccoli or whatever, without salt or oil, they can make it. Obviously, it's not going to taste as good as what you can make for yourself at home, mm-hmm. but you can find it. There's often make your own salads at fast food places now. I always bring snacks with me just in case. Lara bars are great or other, dried fruits and nuts. And I pack, fruits that, like apples and oranges and other mm-hmm. goodies. But it's not been hard for me at all. Once you educate yourself and you know what healthy foods are to eat, you just make it a lifestyle and you make it work for yourself.
I just thought of something amusing to me. I did a water fast about I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, and it was supervised by your dad. And so now whenever I don't see food at an event or something that I want to eat or I can eat, and, you know, people look like they're starving and they have to eat something, and I always say, well, I know I can go 3 weeks without food, so I don't have to eat here.
That's such a good point, because when you eat healthily, you don't go through withdrawal symptoms of the toxic meal that you just ate. And my dad calls it toxic hunger when, you know, maybe a few hours after you eat a hamburger or something and you feel nauseous or you get a migraine and you have to eat again, and that makes the symptoms go away. But I agree. I could just last for, you know, all day without eating, and I get hungry, but it's a mouth and throat sensation, and, you know, it's a pleasant sensation, actually, and it makes food taste better when you do eat. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't have to immediately get food in my stomach.
Yeah, you're not crazy.
Mm-hmm. No.
No. Mm-hmm. We're not crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food.
Tanya,
this
here.
Has really been fun, and I can't wait to see what you're going to come out with next. Books and recipes and everything yummy and delicious.
Thank you so much for having me. This
thank
has been
you.
A joy.
I'm Karen Hartglass, and you've heard another episode of It's All About Food. Join me at Responsible Eating andliving.com, and have a very delicious week. Bye-bye.